President Trump's distaste for the Iran nuclear deal is no secret, having called it, quote, the worst deal ever. But on Friday, the president kept the deal alive when he waived sanctions on Iran for the third time. Under the deal, U.S. presidents sign off on suspending key sanctions and, in exchange, Iran restricts its nuclear program. But Trump said it was the last time he would sign off on the deal. In a statement, he said he renewed it this time only to, quote, secure our European allies' agreement to fix the terrible flaws of the Iran nuclear deal. This is a last chance. Trita Parsi is the founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of the book Losing an Enemy, Obama, Iran, and the Triumph of Diplomacy. He's here to tell us what the future of the deal looks like. Trita, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Do you think the president wants to keep the deal in place with some modifications?
No, I don't think about that at all. I think what this is that the president has found out that there's a way for him to kill this deal without looking as if he's killing the deal. And that is this continuous uncertainty that he's creating about the durability.
Go ahead, Trita.
Sorry?
Go ahead. We had just a little blip there.
Yeah, okay. I was just saying that by constantly creating this debate as to whether he will stick to the deal or not. Every time there's a deadline coming up, it's all to the wire, you know, whether he will renew the waivers or not. This is a deliberate strategy that makes it very uncertain about whether this deal can survive or not. And that uncertainty actually functions as a de facto sanction because it's deterring international companies to go into the Iranian market, and it's making it very difficult for the Iranians to be able to attract investments into Iran. Banks in particular are not willing to finance any investments because these investments are going to last for 5 to 10 years. And if they don't even know if the deal is going to survive for another 3 months, it doesn't make financial sense for them to go in to these ventures. So it has had the effect of keeping international companies out, which means the Iranians are not getting the financial and economic benefit of complying with this deal. And Trump's hope is that after a while, the Iranians will grow so frustrated so that they will walk out of the deal instead of him having to kill it. Because if they walk out of the deal, they will be blamed for it, and the cost will be on their shoulders, not on Donald Trump's.
I would say, though, that it doesn't seem like President Trump really shies away from doing things that might not be viewed well, either domestically or internationally. He seems ready and willing to be a lightning rod in a lot of these cases. Why not? If he really does want to get out of this deal, why doesn't he just do it now instead of creating what is essentially a 120-day delay?
Because he's been saying that he would do it all the time, and every time he's doing a 120-day delay. And after a while, we have to ask ourselves, is it just a coincidence that the exact same thing happens 3 times in a row, or is it actually a deliberate strategy? I agree with you. If it was up to him, he would probably have just done it himself because he doesn't think very far. But because of the other people in the cabinet, particularly Tillerson, McMaster, Kelly, and Mattis, I think they are weighing in on him heavily precisely because they, unlike him, are very much aware of what a tremendous disaster it would be for the United States if it was responsible for the collapse of this deal. We're not talking about another angry tweet. We're not talking about some of these other things that he does that create scandals. This will create an international crisis in which the United States will find itself completely isolated and at odds with Russia, China, France, Germany, and the UK all at the same time. That's why I think they've been succeeding in weighing in on him to do it this other way instead, in which they shift the cost, they shift the blame onto the Iranians.
We're talking with Trita Parsi of the National Iranian American Council and author of the book Losing an Enemy, Obama, Iran, and the Triumph of Diplomacy. We're talking about the Iran nuclear deal and what its fate may be. And Trita, as we said, President Trump said that one reason at least, that he was renewing it now for this last time was to give European allies a chance to help fix the deal. Do you think European allies have any incentive or desire to negotiate what would be considered a better deal by President Trump?
order to fix a deal, the deal needs to be broken. When a deal is not broken, you don't fix it. That's the attitude of the Europeans. They don't see any problem with this deal that needs this type of a fixing. The Iranians have lived up to their end of the bargain. 9 reports by the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, has confirmed that the Iranians are living up to the deal, and as a result, the deal is working. They don't see Trump having credibility when he says that he wants to fix the deal. When he says he wants to fix the deal, if you want to believe that, you have to first be convinced that he's actually looking for a better deal. That's not the impression the Europeans or, frankly, anyone else has. They see him as someone that is just inherently opposed to anything that has Barack Obama's name on it. And as a result, he's looking for various ways of killing it. When he sent it to Congress, Congress realized that Trump was trying to make sure that they would join him in killing it so that he wouldn't be blamed alone. And guess what Congress did? Congress didn't do anything. They had 60 days to be able to pass new sanctions. Congress has rarely failed to pass new sanctions. This time they did. Why? Because they don't want to be directly responsible for the crisis that will ensue once they destroy this deal. And the Europeans don't want to be responsible for the crisis that will ensue once this deal is destroyed. So they're also staying away from any false pretense of trying to fix a deal that already is fixed.
So spell out for us, Trita, what you see the disaster is that would ensue if this deal is scrapped.
Well, what this deal did in its simplest term is that it prevented two very negative outcomes from becoming reality. It took them off the table. Outcome number one was that the Iranians would have a pathway to a nuclear weapon. Outcome number two was that the United States and Iran would go to war with each other. If you destroy this deal, those two bad outcomes come back onto the table. And in some ways, it would probably be much worse, because one of the things that could help prevent a war previously was the fact that diplomacy had not been exhausted. If we actually have a deal, and as a result of Trump's sabotage, it is destroyed, there's a good chance that there really isn't any diplomatic option going forward. And that significantly increases the risk of war. To many members of Congress, when this was sent over to them by Trump, it was kind of like the 2002 vote on giving George W. Bush authority to use force against Iraq. It's a vote that most members of Congress deeply regret, because they became responsible, co-responsible, for the Iraq war disaster. And that's not just Republicans. There were plenty of Democrats who voted for this as well. A vote to kill this deal would be a very similar vote in terms of its implications and its political ramifications.
And Trita, do you think that Iran wants to stay in the deal?
I think the Iranians want to stay in the deal, granted that the U.S. is living up to its end of the bargain. If the United States is not living up to the end of the bargain, there is still a small chance that they will stay in the deal as long as they continue to be able to trade and have investments from Europe and other places. But that is becoming increasingly a question mark, precisely because of the way that Trump quite successfully is deterring international banks and businesses to go into the Iranian market. Right now, we're not seeing any signs that the Iranians are pulling out, but that may change, because political dynamics in Iran are likely going to change if this situation continues for another year or so, and the Iranians feel that they're living up to the end of the bargain. The IAEA confirms that, but they're not getting the economic benefits for doing so.
Trita Parsi is founder and president of the National Iranian American Council. We're looking at the future of the Iran nuclear deal after President Trump said he was renewing it for a final time. Tell us what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you think that the president should have signed off on the Iran nuclear deal? Why or why not? Do you think the U.S. will completely kill the deal? And if we do, does that concern you? Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. We're continuing the conversation with Trita Parsi, founder and president of the National Iranian American Council. And we're looking at the future of the Iran nuclear deal after President Trump said he is renewing it one last time. Tell us what you think about the Iran nuclear deal at 800-642-1234. 1234 or by email at ideas@wpr.org. Do you think the deal should stay or not? Do you agree with the president's decision to sign off on the deal this one last time? Are you worried about what could happen if the deal is scrapped? Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. And let's go to the phone, and Saeed in Green Bay is up. Hi, Saeed.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I think you have just listened to a very articulate representation of the view of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is not the view that is shared by the majority of the people in Iran. And the Iran nuclear deal signed by Obama was very detrimental in many ways. We lost the coalition that had essentially caused the containment of Iran. Since we have signed this deal, we have lost that containment, and the $150 billion of Iranian national wealth that was frozen in the United States, that is given now to the Islamic Republic of Iran, has turned into bombs that have fallen on the heads of defenseless people in Syria. They have translated into rockets that are launched from Yemen into the airport in Riyadh. Havoc is being raised regionally very significantly, but most importantly, this money is being funneled into the oppressive security apparatus that is keeping the people of Iran in chains. So for those freedom seekers that risk their lives on the streets of Tehran, Rasht, Mashhad, Abadan, Ahvaz, all those cities, these dollars translated into a security apparatus that is imprisoning them, that is torturing them, that is obstructing their aspirations for democracy and freedom.
All right, Saeed, thank you for that call. And let's have Trita Parsi respond to that.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm quite stunned by this assessment, because it is so far out of the mainstream. We have plenty of polls that have shown that this was a tremendously popular deal in Iran. In fact, there are plenty of images of the Iranian people dancing on the streets of Tehran when the deal was signed and it was announced. Moreover, systematic polls have shown that this is a deal that had an approval rating of 75% plus. There is disappointment today with the deal, but that's precisely because the economic benefits have not come through. Then the caller mixes up a whole set of different issues. First of all, there were no American money that was frozen, Iranian money that was frozen in the U.S. that was given to the Iranians. What was is that there was money that the Iranians had in foreign banks that were frozen as part of the sanctions, and as part of the deal, they got access to their own money. It wasn't American money that was sent there. When it comes to many of the other regional issues that the United States does have problems with Iran's policies, the idea was that once you have secured a nuclear deal, you're actually paving the way for additional diplomacy in order to be able to address those issues. The alternative to this is actually to go to war. And if that's what people want, I think it would be much better for them to be able to spell that out instead of trying to pretend that they're speaking for the people of Iran. The people of Iran clearly did not want war with the United States. They wanted to make sure that this was resolved peacefully. They want to connect with the outside world. They don't want to live in this type of repressive situation that they're in right now. It is not only repressive from the government side, but is also isolated because of the tensions that exist with the outside world. That's precisely why they supported the deal.
And thank you for that call, Saeed. And Trita, this announcement by President Trump that he is he's waiving the sanctions one last time also happened when there are major anti-government protests going on in Iran. What is the relationship between those two, or do they play off each other in any way?
There is a relationship between the two in the sense that there has been a growing economic discontent. Most of that is because of corruption inside of Iran, because of mismanagement, because of cronyism, and because of very, very bad and growing income inequality and wealth inequality inside of Iran. But part of it is also as a result of the way that Donald Trump has been sabotaging the nuclear deal. Because in order to be able to push down unemployment, for instance, which is usually one of the most important reasons as to why people go to the streets for economic reasons, The Iranians needed investments, but the investment is not coming in because of the uncertainty. So the Rouhani government has succeeded in pushing down inflation significantly, but that usually comes at the expense of increased unemployment. They needed investments in order to be able to counter that. The investments didn't come in mainly as a result of the uncertainty around the deal, which then Donald Trump created.
Let's go back to the phones, and Zach in Waupaca is up. Hi, Zach.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think Trump, as the businessman, has shown that he uses bankruptcy as a tool for speculation for windfall deals, as he would probably put it. And I think he's clearly shown in a couple different ways he's using nuclear war as a threat, as the same type of tool to strong-arm countries into doing what he likes. And I just think that's not only dangerous, there's going to be a backlash. You can't just strong-arm whole cultures and just doing what you want them to do instead of coming together and agreeing on what you can agree on, for instance, human rights.
Thanks for that call, Zach. So an interesting point there. Trita, do you think there are points where the U.S. and Iran could work together to build that relationship instead of it all focusing around this particular deal?
Well, in order for them to be able to focus on other things, which I think would definitely be in the national interest of the United States, the Iranians were some of the most efficient forces fighting ISIS, for instance, and they were doing it together with the U.S., but without coordination. In order to be able to do more of that, first, we need to make sure that this deal remains in place, because if the deal collapses, then we're going to end up in a much, much more negative situation, and then I think it's going to be impossible to expect any collaboration, even if it may lie in the interest of the two sides to collaborate. I think the caller is quite right, though. This is a very reckless and dangerous way of trying to coerce other nations to do what you want. And what's important to understand here, Trump is not trying to coerce just Iran to do what he wants. He's trying to coerce the Russians, the Chinese, the French, the Brits, the Germans, all at the same time. And the end result is quite predictable. All of them have united against the United States, which is a very bizarre situation. They all used to be united against Iran. Now they're united against Trump.
It's been reported that the White House actually wants a new deal with Iran that would cover Iran's ballistic missiles as well, not just nuclear weapons. Is that a fair ask, or would that get any traction?
Well, again, I personally think that there may have been a chance of being able to secure an additional deal that is not dependent on this deal, that is separate. But in order for us to be able to achieve such a deal, we first need to have credibility. And that credibility is based on us living up to the first deal. No one is going to negotiate a second deal with the United States if the United States destroys the first deal. This is part of the reason why this is so dangerous also for this situation with North Korea. If the United States destroys the existing deal with Iran, why would the North Koreans even bother to engage in diplomacy with the United States when the U.S. doesn't have the credibility of being trustworthy and being seen as a country that lives up to its word? That's another reason, I think, why Mattis and others have been pushing Trump not to kill the deal outright, precisely because of the way it would so negatively affect the situation with North Korea.
Let's go back to the phones, and Wayne in Marshfield is up. Hi, Wayne.
I agree 100% with your guest. President Trump is a disruptor, and any time he does it all the time. He blames this on the previous administration, on this, on President Obama, and he's a disruptor, pulling out of the Paris Agreement, the TPP, and anything he can disrupt, he does it. He doesn't think ahead. He doesn't plan ahead. He just works in the minute and doesn't even consider consequences.
Thanks for that call, Wayne. And Trita?
What the caller just said is a very common perspective in Europe right now, in which part of the reason why they're putting up such a fierce resistance against Trump when it comes to the Iran deal is because they believe, well, if he destroys the Iran deal, he's just going to move on and destroy the next deal and the next deal and the next one. And eventually, there's not going to be any international agreements at all. And without international agreements and collaboration, we're going to live in a much, much more dangerous world. So this is part of the reason why the Europeans are taking this very, very seriously, because they're so afraid that this is just yet another step of Trump destroying deals that really constitute the foundation of the current international liberal order.
And Trita, as we start to wrap up, what will you be looking for in the next days and weeks for indicators about where the White House might be going on this?
I will actually keep most of my eyes on the Europeans, because I think what we're going to end up seeing likely is that they're actually going to beef up their involvement in the deal in order to ensure that it survives. Instead of giving Trump any concessions, they're going to move closer and deeper into the deal in order to make sure that it potentially could survive without the United States in it.
And who are the main European leaders who might really step forward on this?
Well, you have the Brits, the Germans, and the French. And Macron has been very vocal on this. And then, quite interestingly, Britain, who usually tends to be a little bit closer to the U.S., particularly when there's differences between the U.S. and Europe, has taken a very, very clear position with the Europeans and very, very negatively towards what Trump is doing on this. The only two countries in the world that essentially are supporting what Trump is doing is Israel and Saudi Arabia, two countries that incidentally want the United States to go to war with Iran.
Well, Trita, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Trita Parsi is the founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of the book Losing an Enemy, Obama, Iran, and the Triumph of Diplomacy.